The following is a Relevant Radio program and is protected under U.S. copyright laws. This program is made possible through the contributions of listeners like you. Support Relevant Radio by clicking on the donate icon at www.relevantradio.com.
Never knew such a love could be found. It's so amazing. I can taste, I can feel, I can see, for I am facing love divine. You have found me just in time. You are my all in all, love divine.
Bridging the gap for your morning drive, it's Morning Air with Sean Harriott, along with Glenn Leverins, bringing you the news from the Vatican and around the world. And now, here's your host, Sean Harriott.
I'm Sean Harriott. Thanks so much for joining me for this hour of Morning Air. Certainly glad to be along with you. And we're going to talk about leadership, and particularly about servant leadership this half hour. Joining me right now is Father Keith Clark. He's a member of the Capuchin Franciscan Order. He's taught and published a number of articles in the area of servant leadership and has held various leadership positions throughout his career. His most recent book is the one that he's here to talk about, Leadership, The Art of Empowering, and his co-author, Mike Panther, is a retired executive with more than 32 years of experience in manufacturing and operations. Good morning, Father.
Good morning, Sean.
Good to have you here. And Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Father. Good morning, Sean. Good to talk to you both.
So I guess if you could start by telling us how this collaboration came together. Did you two know each other before you wrote the book?
Oh, my, no. That was the great joy of it, because when we met, we found out that even though we came from very different perspectives or backgrounds, we had sort of arrived at the same place. Mm. I was teaching a leadership skills course at St. Lawrence Seminary in Mount Calvary, Wisconsin, and that was when I began to articulate what I guess had been inside of me all along. And then a businessman, head of a large insurance agency, said, "Do you ever do that stuff for businesses?" And I said, "Well, haven't." And he asked me to do it, so I did 4 half-day seminars for him and his staff. And then I started writing, and I really wanted to collaborate with somebody from the for-profit segment. And Mike's brother-in-law and I are good friends.
Oh,
and I was complaining to his brother-in-law that I was not able to find somebody. He said, "You know, you might want to talk to Mike."
And I have to chime in here. When my brother-in-law sent me a quick email and said, "I think I have a job opportunity for you," I had recently retired and had made it pretty clear to the family that retirement is what I wanted to do. And and the title of the email was job opportunity. And frankly, I did not respond to it. I just said, I didn't need a job opportunity.
Right.
And yet he called and filled me in on what, just a quick summary of what Father Keith had in mind, and set up the connection. And I did, we did discuss, and as Father Keith said, we kind of found out very quickly that we are of like mind in this area. And in fact, we had read and many of the same authors of the topic. And from there came the collaboration.
Can you define what you mean by servant leadership?
Well, I think both Mike and I have arrived at the point where we don't think there's any kind of leadership except servant leadership. Because most leadership stuff that's written is written by studying what people in leadership positions did or are doing in order to get other people to do what they want them to do. And we sort of believe that, well, you know, you can get other people to do what you want them to do by manipulating them or by intimidating them. And we didn't think that was leadership. Mm. We thought leadership was empowering other people to contribute what they have to offer. So, you know, if you go to those who are in leadership positions to find out, well, how were they successful in doing what they wanted to do, you could read the Gospels and find out what Pontius Pilate did and what Herod did and what the Pharisees did. And if you take that as leadership, well, I think you're going down the wrong path.
Mm.
So I don't think there's any leadership except servant leadership. and that is empowering others to serve.
I might add to that that we have gotten to this point by our writings and our discussions, but I think we both believe strongly that this empowerment to the people in the organization really allows them to use their skills and at the highest level they can possibly use them to benefit both not only themselves but the organization too. I think servant leadership also gives all the people involved. I think there are some characteristics. The servant leader gives them space to thrive, boundaries to optimize success, and feedback on their performance and informing them. So that's the characteristics of servant leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Right in the first chapter, actually the first page of the book, you talk about what you were just saying, Father Keith. And in the book, you say, if prominent people getting others to do what one wants them to do as leadership, then Pope John the 23rd and Adolf Hitler, Mother Teresa and Vince Lombardi are equally considered great leaders. That's a great point. I mean, obviously drives home the fact that it's not just about getting results. It's about, well, the results you're trying to get, but also how you're treating people while you're getting them.
Yeah, there's some people will engage in servant leadership because it works. Mm. And actually, I have found businesses have been the most strong proponents of this approach to leadership, and because it works. But the reason it works is because it's the right way to treat people. Mm-hmm. And some people will do it because it works. Others will do it because it's the right way to treat people. Mm-hmm. But in either case, it's servant leadership.
Mm-hmm. So if you're following those principles, you're gonna end up with essentially the same outcome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, did you see that to be the case? You were in the manufacturing sector for over 30 years.
Yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, obviously in that time, rising through the ranks and running companies, you saw a whole bunch of different approaches to leadership.
Well, you know, and I did, for lack of a better word, evolve into this belief. I really didn't understand what I didn't have a title for it or a name for my style of leadership until I had begun to do more reading and understood the concept of servant leadership. But it had always been, and I'm not sure where this core belief comes from, but that as a leader in an organization, the command and control environment has its place in certain places. I mean, in a time of military conflict, you want somebody in charge and somebody clearly in charge. And there are other instances of crises where you have to have a command and control type environment. But I found over time that by eliciting my colleagues to be involved in the process, understand not only what we were doing, but why we were doing it, tended to get better results. It tended to get people more to buy in on a regular basis. So in my career throughout, you know, from first-line supervisor to leading large organizations, as I moved up the ladder, so to speak, it worked at all levels, regardless of which people, you know, with whom you were dealing. It worked if you made the effort to help them understand what their contribution meant, and then gave them the space to do that, but also at the same time gave them the boundaries so they knew the limits and routine feedback. And sometimes that feedback was, hey, you're not cutting the mustard, you're not getting the job done. But still, that was part of servant leadership in my mind.
You made such an important point looking at those two areas, freedom and also boundaries, because I think there's a safety in that. Just like when you know, as parents, we do the same thing with our children. Because I as an employee, that's the times when I found it the most difficult are the times where I don't know where the boundaries are.
Yes, and I think that's a very significant point because some could understand or interpret the concept of servant leadership of where the leader just, my words, but rolls over and plays dead. And that is not at all what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We're talking about clearly defining the goals and the objectives, providing the tools necessary for the people to do what they need to do, but at the same time giving them, as we said, the freedom to do what they can do with their skill set. within the strictly, you know, within the defines of what definition of what I want this organization to achieve.
Just let me piggyback on that. Some organizations or some people in leadership positions, they focus so heavily on the project that they lose sight of the people.
Mm-hmm.
A servant leader focuses not only on what does the project need, but what do the people need in order to accomplish the project.
I'm talking with Father Keith Clark and Mike Panther, who've co-authored this book, Leadership, The Art of Empowering Attitudes and Skills for Transformative Leadership. We'll talk about how to get the book, and we'll talk more about the concept of servant leadership as we continue. Stay with us.
Have friends or family in a community that doesn't have Relevant Radio? Tell them they can listen online at relevantradio.com. Talk radio for Catholic life anywhere, anytime at relevantradio.com.
This is Saint of the Day for February 19th from the Franciscans and St. Anthony Messenger Press. Today we celebrate St. Conrad of Piacenza. An uncontrollable fire changed the life of today's saint. Born in 1290, Conrad was hunting one day in his native northern Italy when a fire he had lit got out of control. It spread to nearby fields and to a large forest as well. He fled the scene. Meanwhile, an innocent peasant was imprisoned, tortured into a confession, and condemned to death. Overcome by guilt, Conrad confessed and sold all his possessions to pay for the damaged property. A short time later, he and his wife agreed to separate. She entered a poor Clare monastery, and Conrad, then 25, joined a group of Franciscan hermits. Despite his quiet life, Conrad's reputation for holiness spread quickly. To better focus on his prayer life, he moved to a remote spot in Sicily. There he lived for 36 years as a hermit, praying for the world and for himself. People suffering from various complaints came to him there as well, seeking cures through his prayers. In 1350, Conrad died, kneeling before a crucifix and praying for the people of his town. His burial place soon became a popular shrine. There's more about the saints, along with inspiration and Catholic resources, at our website, franciscanradio.org. From the Franciscans and St. Anthony Messenger Press, this is Saint of the Day.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
And coming up, be sure to join me for more great discussion, insightful commentary, and excellent guests as I pull back the veil and take a look at all the current news and issues of the day. I promise you'll get a look at life unlike anywhere else on the radio dial.
It's Drew Mariani. Life as you've never heard it.
The Drew Mariani Show, 2 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
I'm Sean Harriott. You're listening to Morning Air, and this half hour we're talking about servant leadership. Father Keith Clark is with me, as well as Mike Panther. They've co-authored a book called Leadership, The Art of Empowering. Father, you were talking right before the break about how a person who is embracing servant leadership isn't just looking at what needs to be done in terms of the project, but looking at what the people need to not only to get it done, but I would think also to feel good about the work they're doing.
For me, that's terribly important. I have been involved in leadership studies and for ages, and so everybody who comes across an article or a book on leadership, they shove it under my nose. I read them, and sometimes they're actually about leadership. But at other times, I think they're just about control or manipulation. Can I tell you a story?
Please.
One of my students graduated. He went to college and studying marketing, and he had the opportunity to go to Disney World for a semester and work there. His job there was as a clerk in a gift shop, and they indoctrinated all their colleagues with the mission of Disney World. And it was not that people come to Disney World, it was that people come back to Disney World. Mm-hmm. And this young man was in this gift shop, and parents came in with a little girl, and they bought this glass doll with fabric clothing for the little girl, and he put it in a bag, and she was walking out, and she tripped and fell and smashed the doll.
On her way out the door.
On the way out the door. So back they come, and they want another one, and my friend said, we don't have another one just like that, but let me take your name and address, and I'll ship you one. And so they gave him that information, and Dad took out his credit card, and my friend said, no, 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 that's all right. It was an accident. Mm. Now, he did not have to consult a supervisor because the boundaries and the goal of what he was about was absolutely clear in his mind, but he was expected to use his own judgment on how to accomplish that goal. Mm-hmm. Now, do you think they'll come back?
Oh, absolutely, sure.
Do you think when she grows up, that little girl, do you think she'll bring her family? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So having control over what one does is terribly important. In fact, it's sometimes rated the highest satisfaction provider in the business world. So having control over what I do is terribly important, but knowing, as Mike said, within what boundaries and toward what goal is equally important. Mm.
It's interesting, you know, as you look at management studies, that people will, over and above the things you would think, benefits, wages, they talk about control and also feeling that the work they're doing makes some kind of difference.
Yep. And that they have some control over what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being from the private sector, if you will, from the an operations, manufacturing, distribution, sales side of the coin, so to speak, when one of the things we tried to do was that specific point, Sean, was to make sure that the all of the colleagues knew what was the long-term goal. Why were we here? We were here, obviously, to produce a product, sell a product, and so on and so forth, but there's more to it. We were here to develop the skill set that an individual has to provide them some security in a job function, to provide them hopefully some opportunity to even grow their skill set and so on. So there was more than just make a widget or make a profit for the company. There were other things that we tried to show people that was in it for them, so to speak.
See, that would be an example to me of focusing not only on the project, but focusing on the people and what do they need in order to accomplish the project.
It's interesting, Mike, you mentioned the company, because I thinking back on positions I've had, especially positions where servant leadership was clearly not the way things were being done, the phrase "the company," you would hear it all the time. You'd read it in memos. It would be capitalized. And what was clear was the company is more important than any of the individuals that are sitting in this meeting or reading this memo.
Well, and just by that specific comment, I think the listeners can get a flavor for your view or your perspective of how that impacted you.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in those organizations. We've probably all been in that type of an organization, and we've all had that same feeling that, wow, I'm just here to benefit somebody else, and there's nothing here for me. And that doesn't create very good performance incentives on an individual basis, nor does it generate the best results for the organization either.
Mm-hmm. In Chapter 3, you talk about thinking behavior, not position. I'd love to hear both of your thoughts on that. This is very interesting.
Okay. as I say, we think that leadership is doing something for colleagues. Well, I can hold a leadership position, but not engage in leadership behavior because I'm not empowering my colleagues. I'm controlling them.
Mm-hmm.
The reverse of that is true too. You do not have to be in a leadership position in order to exercise leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Anything anybody in the organization does that empowers other people in that organization to serve is exercising leadership because of the behavior, not because of the position. Now, it's really been demonstrated that anybody in an organization can increase productivity and everything else simply by empowering their colleagues to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't cost anything. There's no studies. There's no consultants. They do it. If I were doing a seminar, for one business, at this point, I would pull out these little buttons and make everybody put them on. It says, I am a leader. I empower others to serve. Mm. Because that concept is so hard to get across that leadership is a matter of behavior, not position. Mm.
So, Mike, it's a matter of recognizing that whatever your position is, you are going to influence other people.
Well, I think one of the examples that drove this home most to me that I think can explain the idea is that in our organization, in the last company I worked for, oftentimes, I mean, we were always looking for the highest quality employee, as I think everyone is. And at one point, we hired an individual to be prepare him to lead in a very senior level management position. He had all the skills in the world, but we found out that in his the way he acted, if you will, it really came down to the point of he was given the authority with the title and the position, but he never went through the process of earning the respect and earning the position. Mm-hmm. And because of the way he involved and engaged with people. So that behavior, the gentleman had all the skills in the world to be a successful person in our organization, except he never used those skills to get to the next level. As I told him, you know, the position was earned, but respect is earned, mm-hmm. and that respect is earned by the behavior and the way you interact with your colleagues and the people around you.
Some of the stuff that I've that has been put under my nose to read said that people don't leave their company, they don't leave their job, they leave their boss. And, you know, what is it called? Conference board. Somebody just mm-hmm. stuck it under my nose that in 2009, 51% of workers surveyed said they were satisfied with their boss. That was down from 55% the year before. Now, if people leave their bosses, not their company,
right.
not their job, is another real good reason for making sure that your boss is your leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think in today's environment, with the economic conditions that we are slowly rebounding from but I think as the future looks is that every company, you hear it all the time, we're looking for this strategic edge. We're looking for this component that will make us differentiation just a little better than all of those around us. And if you, as an employer, if I am not engaging my colleagues to participate at the highest level they can, I have left that opportunity on the table, so to speak. I have not optimized that or differentiated myself to that position where I can be ahead of my competitors, and I'm not going to be as successful. And boy, today, with everything going on, that razor-thin difference may well be the difference between long-term survival and not.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. We've just barely scratched the surface. The book is called Leadership, The Art of Empowering. And Father, you have a book on this that's coming out as well?
No. Well, I'm working on another book,
oh, okay.
but not on leadership. Yeah. Can I make a plug?
Sure. Absolutely.
The book can be obtained for $24.95 on the internet. Just K. Clark at the Capuchins. CAPUCHINS.org. And Mike and I are going to be doing a seminar in Milwaukee for you. That listeners in that area on March 30th at Cardinal Stritch University. You can go online to www.stritch.edu/Keith Clark.
Great, and we'll put all that information up at our website so people can find
Thank
it.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Father Keith Clark and Mike Panther. The book, again, Leadership, The Art of Empowering. Thank you, Father.
You're welcome.
Mike, great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean. It's a pleasure.
29 minutes past the hour, and coming up, of course, we've got three questions, your chance to win a cool prize. In fact, we've got something really nice for Lent. It is a CD called Lenten Reflections, Music for the Liturgical Season by Vicki Keppers. You can find out more about it online at relevantradio.com. Keyword music. Just write the word music into our search field. That'll take you to Vicki's website. We're giving away a copy of that right now as we play three questions. 877-766-3777. 877-766-3777.
Glenn is standing by to help if you need a hint. Call now and play three questions. 877-766-3777. That's 877-766-3777.
Good morning, I'm Glenn Livrens with Relevant Radio News. After being held in a Haitian jail for several weeks, four Baptist missionaries, once accused of kidnapping orphans, flew into Kansas City Thursday afternoon. Attorney Caleb Stengel represents the men, including Topeka firefighter Drew Culbert. He says they're happy to be home.
They're here in one piece. We are pleased with the thorough review that the Haitian court performed. We're pleased that they were brought back in one piece, and we're pleased that the judge exonerated.
None of the missionaries have made a public statement yet. The investigation continues into the crash of a small plane into an Austin, Texas office building yesterday. The incident left two dead, including the pilot, Joseph Stack. Stack left a rambling suicide note on the internet. He ranted against the federal government, particularly the Internal Revenue Service, which had offices in the building. And President Obama expected to lend a helping hand to states that have been hit hard in the housing crisis. During a trip to Las Vegas, the president expected to announce $1.5 billion will be allocated to programs at local housing finance agencies in Nevada, California, Arizona, Michigan, and Florida. Keeping you connected with the church and the world 24 hours a day and on the web at relevantradio.com. I'm Glenn Livrens, and this is listener-supported Relevant Radio.
The latest news from the Vatican and the world. RelevantRadio.com. Now access the coming changes to the English translation of the Roman Missal you need to know at RelevantRadio.com. Keyword, changes.
I'm talking with Father John Paul Erickson. We're talking about the coming changes to the English translation of the Roman Missal.
What's critical is that we remember that this new translation is really part of the whole reform called for by the Council. It's an ongoing process, and the heart of that reform is to make the liturgy the source and summit of our life, to make the Mass, to make the sacramental life of the Church the centerpiece. And it seems to me that all of our web pages, all of our discussions, all of our even presentations on radio programs will mean nothing if this critical principle is not realized.
Your link to the upcoming changes to the English translation of the Roman Missal, relevantradio.com, keyword changes. That's relevantradio.com, keyword changes.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rick Fitzgibbons from the Institute for Marital Healing. Are you looking for ways to help your children with their emotional conflicts? As a responsible parent, you need to understand the origin of their conflicts and to protect your children by helping them to grow in virtues. And what are the major weaknesses that interfere with the psychological health of children? Based on over 30 years of experience with large numbers of families and children, we believe they are selfishness, excessive anger, controlling behaviors, anxiety, and weaknesses in confidence. Of course, as parents, we may also be struggling with some of these behaviors, leading to further stress for the family. Visit childhealing.com to use our checklist to identify these issues and for free, effective advice on improving the emotional health of your children and family. That's childhealing.com.
Hey everyone, it's Father Rocky, and if I could, I'd shake your hand and say thank you very much for your generous support of Relevant Radio. But I can't shake your hand over the radio, but I can thank you, and we all thank you, all of us at Relevant Radio, and that includes all of our listeners too. They thank you for keeping us on the air in your community. Thanks for making our first pledge drive of the year a great success. All who made a donation made a sacrifice, and many young people, the hope and future of our church and our country, they made generous and inspiring sacrifices too, and I'll bet there's future saints among them. And we especially thank St. Joseph and Blessed Andre and our Blessed Mother for their special intercession for Relevant Radio. Now it's back to business and praying for your special prayer intentions, and don't forget to pray for us, and be sure to spread the word about Relevant Radio. If you didn't get a chance to pledge in the pledge drive last week, you can call us at 877-291-0123 or pledge online at relevantradio.com.
I think if you had a top five of the most important things happening, I think Catholic radio is right up there at the top.
Talk radio for Catholic life. This is listener-supported Relevant Radio.
And RelevantRadio.com.
Bishop Robert Morlino of the Diocese of Madison on Relevant Radio.
The Mass, of course, is one fabric woven from one cloth, and there are two different threads that are interwoven during the Mass, the Liturgy of the Word and the Liturgy of the Eucharist. I say that these threads are interwoven because the whole point of the Liturgy of the Word is to allow the Lord to open our hearts to receive His wondrous presence in the Eucharist. And during the Liturgy of the Eucharist, there are many scriptural phrases that are part of the text of our prayers. For example, "This is my body broken for you. This is my blood poured out for you." So we distinguish between the Liturgy of the Word and the Liturgy of the Eucharist. But as a matter of fact, Word and Eucharist are the two interwoven threads that comprise the fabric that we call the Mass.
What fears are you facing, and where is God calling you to grow in trust? I know for me, my whole faith journey is built on this word called trust, and maybe that's the case for you.
It's The Inner Life, only on Relevant Radio.
Minutes in front of the hour, Sean Harriott on Morning Air. And coming up next hour, Father Shane Tharp looks at culture. He'll look a little bit at the Olympics and isolationism, because he thinks a lot, and also tell you about something Elton John said about Jesus and what Father has to say about that. Also, Stephen Greidonis will take a look at The Wolfman. Talk a little bit about horror films and Catholicism, and also tell us about some good Lenten viewing for our edification. All of that coming up next hour on the program.
It's Three Questions.
And Bonnie is with us in Neenah, Wisconsin, listening to Relevant Radio AM 1050. Hey, Bonnie.
Hi.
How's it going?
Terrific.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. So what's on the menu tonight for this Friday in Lent?
I have to check, but I think one of the parishes in Neenah, St. Gabe's, is having a fish fry.
Ah, very good. Can't go wrong with the fish fry.
Nope.
Absolutely. Say good morning to Glenn Leverins.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Hey, pretty good, Bonnie. Hey, is Laura Coonan, the famous Minnesota Gopher basketball player from Neenah, there?
I don't know. I don't follow girls' basketball.
Okay. That was years ago. I used to announce her name scoring all the time.
I'm not a basketball fan. Sorry.
That's okay.
Well, should we still let her win today, Sean?
I think we should, Glenn, just in a spirit of generosity.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Bonnie, you have won the CD Lenten Reflections, the music of Vicki Kippers. It's part of her Music for the Liturgical Season series, and we'll be sending that out to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. And, of course, free hints from Glenn as well.
Wonderful. I'll probably need them.
All right. In today's reading from the book of Isaiah, the Lord criticizes the Israelites, saying that when it comes to fasting, they never fast too much, or keep the required fasts, but in a meaningless way.
I think I know, but I'll go for a hint.
All right.
Fasting for the Israelites wasn't hard to start, but Jesus knew it's less about the stomach and more about the heart.
Good stuff.
That would make C.
Yes, it would. Oh, and that's me. Sorry. Here we go. Again, some bell management issues this morning, but we're right on top of it.
Well, that's all right. It's Friday.
Josh is in for Matt. Matt runs our board. Josh is doing a fantastic job, but I'm doing the bells this morning, which Matt usually does. Let's see. It says, "Lo, on your fast day, you carry out your own pursuits and drive all your laborers. Yes, your fast ends in quarreling and fighting, striking with wicked claws." So obviously, not quite getting into the spirit of the thing. Question number two, the requirement for the faithful to observe days of fasting and abstinence is one of the precepts of the church, corporal works of mercy, or fruits of the Holy Spirit?
Let's go with a hint.
If you abstain from B and C and also eat no meat for today's contest, you'll be the one to beat.
Oh, now I'm confused.
We're abstaining from B and C. I think that's the...
Okay, so it'd be A then.
There we go. Very nice.
I'm sorry, yeah. I got confused.
No, I think
letters.
I respect Glenn enormously, but I think he took the long way on that one. So, all right. Question number three. The Olympic rope climb was an event in five Olympic Games between 1896 and 1932. It's exactly what it sounds like. They would scramble up a freestanding rope. In the 1896 Athens Games, only two competitors reached the top of the rope. Why? Because it snapped after the first two climbers? It was too long? Or only two athletes competed that year?
I'm going to go for a hint because I never heard of this sport.
I think that's wise.
You're not alone. You're climbing to the top, dreaming of hearing your country's song. And then you look down and feel like saying so long.
Oh, it must have snapped.
Wait a minute. Did I get
long.
Long. Too long.
There we go. Excellent. Yeah, it was 46 feet long.
46?
46 feet long, which only two of the guys could actually make it to the top. So, I guess why we don't see Olympic rope climbing anymore. Hey, Abani, you did a fantastic job.
Well, thank you very much. It was fun.
Enjoy your fish fry.
Thank you.
Thanks. 46 feet long. The rope was simply too long for most Olympians. Two Greek athletes took the gold and the silver, and they were the only ones who made it to the top of the rope. That was 1896. And then 1904, 1924, and 1932, the competition was done, but a shorter rope was used. So there you go. Olympic rope climbing.
Hey, Olympic trivia for you here. I was wondering about that basketball player from Neenah, Wisconsin,
back when
I was the public address announcer for the Minnesota Gophers women's basketball team in the 80s. And we'd have to, you know, part of the starting lineup was where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Neenah, Wisconsin always stuck in my head. Laura Coonan, sure enough, played for the Gophers and went on to be an Olympic team handball goalie.
Oh, wow.
In 88, 92, and 96. And I don't know that we've addressed Olympic team handball.
I don't think we have.
Yet. But we've learned a lot about the Olympics this week.
Yes, we may have to find out more about team handball now. Very good. And the precepts of the church, by the way.
Oh, let's find out about those, too.
Yeah. Number one, you shall attend Mass on Sundays and holy days of obligation and rest from servile labor. Number two, you shall confess your sins at least once a year. Number three, you shall receive the sacrament of the Eucharist at least during the Easter season. Number four, you shall observe the days of fasting and abstinence established by the church. And the fifth precept, you shall help to provide for the needs of the church, meaning that the faithful are obliged to assist with the material needs of the church, each according to his own ability. And that's not, it's not a matter of, okay, well, I've done the bare minimum here, so I'm good. It really is genuinely the bare minimum. What the church is saying is, that's the survival mode. That's the 1,200 calories a day of your spiritual diet. And, of course, we want to do a little better than that. It's 17 minutes in front of the hour, and Wendy Weiss coming up next. Stay with me.
Answering Pope John Paul II's call for a new evangelization.
Thank you so much. God bless you both. I greatly appreciate what you're doing.
Relevant Radio.
40 days, 40 links. Make Relevant Radio your Lenten radio station and visit relevantradio.com, keyword Lent, for 40 days, 40 links. It's your one stop on the internet for links to special Lenten prayers, links to Lenten reflections, and interesting Lenten facts. 40 days of Lent, 40 great web links to powerful and inspirational Lenten prayers and reflections from Talk Radio for Catholic Life. Relevant Radio, only on relevantradio.com, keyword Lent.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
I was recently in Houston for a pro-life protest. Planned Parenthood is building the largest mill there in the Western Hemisphere. It's huge, with six floors, the third solely dedicated to late-term abortions. It's located in Hispanic and Black neighborhoods. The two-day event drew a diverse crowd from every walk of life. There were over 10,000 people. At least half of them, if not more, were young people. And boy, do they have passion. Their message is positive and impossible to ignore. Several kids told me what apparently many adults either don't know or have forgotten. Life is a precious gift from God and should be protected. The protests got lots of attention, and there are more events planned to stop this enormous abortion mill from opening. Please pray they succeed.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Help the Holy Father and inspire souls with a love God loves.
The unmistakable voice of Archbishop Fulton Sheen. Archbishop Sheen's Faithful Witness can help map a direction for our own lives. Faithful Witness, the life and legacy of Archbishop Fulton Sheen.
Faithful Witness, Part 1, this Saturday night at 8:30 Central and this Sunday afternoon at 2:30 Central on Relevant Radio.
It's 15 minutes in front of the hour. I'm Sean Harriott on Morning Air. Glad to be with you. And with me right now is Wendy Weiss, host of On Call with Wendy Weiss. Hey!
Did you almost forget the name
no.
of your program?
I was just
Sean Harriott, and this is Morning Something.
Whatever. I'm a little tired. We went to the Winter Carnival at Julie's school last night. We had a great time. It was just crazy and crowded and just exactly what it should be with a bunch of elementary school kids running around. Then we went out to the car and at that moment realized that the keys were in Stacy's coat, which was in the car.
Oh, yeah. Have been there, have done that.
So I called the good folks at AAA, and for whatever reason, it took about an hour and a half between holding and waiting. The people who came were very nice. The guy had the car open in about 30 seconds, which included the time it took him to get the little thingy out of his truck. But we had to wait an hour and a half for him to get there. So,
oh my goodness! So yeah. you were really. I mean, you were pushing it when it came to sleep time.
Yeah, and you know, after something like that, you can't just like go to sleep. So
no.
We actually didn't get in that late. Although Julie, you know, she went to bed pretty late, but I was up. Far later than I should have been. So anyway, I'm okay though.
Poor me.
Yeah.
You know, no, but it's an odd thing. You know, what normally would just be a blip on somebody else's radar. When you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, it becomes a pretty big deal. So
it really, really does.
Yeah.
Yep. We're fine now. But if that's the worst thing that happens to me in 2010.
Then you are in good shape.
I think so.
You are in good shape.
I think so.
But I think you're usually tired just because of Julie's energy. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we hear it during the pledge drive. And just enough of that little snippet is enough to exhaust most mortals.
You know, something else that's happening now is her bedroom is directly across the hall from our bedroom. And she has like started waking up in the morning when I go downstairs to leave. And so I'm doing this like, you know, this exaggerated tiptoe thing past her bedroom. And we've also taken the collar off the dog because Molly will go outside. And if she'll get up and she'll give herself a good shake, which, of course, makes the tags on her collar ring.
Jingle,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So we've taken the collar off. I think three mornings this week, I've woken Julie up and you know, had to tuck her back in and get her back in bed. And she wants to know if she can watch me leave and becomes this whole long thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's cute. So that's anyway. So cute. Yeah. But now, have you been watching the Olympics? Am I the only person in America who has not been watching the Olympics?
Well, this is a community property state. So since Stacy has been watching the Olympics, I really haven't been, no. She's been watching them all, and I don't think I've watched anything. I watched a little bit of the opening ceremonies, and that was about it.
Well, they're predicting, you know, I guess Michael Phelps part two, you know, that untold, hopefully not in every way.
Yeah, right.
But they're predicting just untold millions for Shaun White and Lindsey Vonn and all of those folks. It's, you know, it's amazing to me that kind of commitment to a sport when you think that these people have dedicated decades of their lives to this one moment.
Oh, it's incredible.
It really is thrilling, and never having had any athletic ability of any kind, I mean, not even a molecule of athletic ability, It's pretty inspiring to watch, but I'm not sure why I'm not. And I think I was so upset by the way the luge, the death was handled.
Oh, it was horrible. It really, yeah. It just the whole feeding frenzy mentality of, you know, we're very upset about this. Let's watch it again in slow motion.
Yeah, let's put it on YouTube.
Yeah,
for the family and the friends around the world who. It was such a sad, shocking moment about where we are today.
Well, the sheer hypocrisy, especially of the major networks saying, you know, we're very saddened by this, and here, we'll roll it again for the third time in 2 minutes. And it was interesting, too, after there was a massive backlash, and I kind of did a quick tour of the websites of all the major news organizations a couple days after it happened, and there was so much criticism. And I could only find one of them, ABC, that had any footage at all. And I think it was just footage they'd forgotten to take down. It was gone from YouTube. It was gone everywhere. So it was interesting to see how sort of ashamed they really were, because even though they were defending the decision when they were doing it within, you know, 24 hours, you couldn't find it anywhere, which is, mm-hmm. as you were saying, I mean, think about the family knowing that it's on YouTube. People are watching it endlessly. Some of them literally for entertainment. How painful could that be?
Well, and the fact that they seem to be, and again, you know, bravo to David Letterman for calling the IOC on the carpet on this one. You know, he said you're blaming the young man for his own death.
Yeah, yeah.
When you immediately altered the course because of his death. I mean that just absolutely made no sense. And it was a very bad way to start these games.
Yeah, and the sheer sadness of hearing that this guy had called his dad the day before
he
died, saying, "I am scared to death of this track." He knew it was too much for him, but he wanted to compete, and I mean that's completely understandable. But for that track to be a good 10 miles an hour faster than any other luge track in the world, when luge is already one of the most dangerous sports ever. It really does seem pretty irresponsible.
And not contained. I mean, it looks as if the entire track where you would not, if you're in a tube and you're traveling in excess of 90 miles an hour, you would want the top to be completely covered or at least, you know, curled over in some way so that the luger, who is in effect a missile, doesn't leave the track.
Yeah, if we can manage to figure out a way to put up barriers so that people on the freeway don't vault into the oncoming lanes, there ought to be a way to be able to safely return that luger to the track. Because if there'd been, you know, if there'd been walls built up, if there'd been some kind of safety, wall there, he probably wouldn't have died. So
this isn't over.
This
isn't over.
No.
We probably won't because of the power of the Olympic Games. We probably won't hear anything about it. But this isn't over.
You know, I was reading some really fascinating stuff too about there's kind of a movement now of people calling for the Olympic Games to find a permanent home and just have it there every 4 years, because every city that has hosted the Olympic Games has lost money, and Vancouver has spent $5 billion more than they thought they would. $5 billion.
Think of the social ills that could be corrected with that kind of money.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing about it, we talked about this, you and I talked about this during the summer games in China, that they had basically bussed all the homeless people somewhere where people couldn't see them. Well, it's not just China that did that. Vancouver did the same thing. They just basically say, we don't want you to be our problem. And they eliminate a lot of low-income housing. They get rid of the homeless problem by getting the people out of the way, but not actually finding places for them to go. So there's a huge social issue there, but also this gigantic, just financial sinkhole. These cities
sinkhole,
end up,
that's perfect.
That's really
exactly what it is.
That's exactly what it is. Totally what it becomes. More with Wendy coming up. We'll take a look at what's in store for On Call today. Stay with us.
Relevant Radio, just a click away. Listen to Relevant Radio online at work. Go to relevantradio.com and click on the Listen Online icon. Talk radio for Catholic life on the web at relevantradio.com.
This is Saint of the Day for February 19th from the Franciscans and St. Anthony Messenger Press. Today we celebrate St. Conrad of Piacenza. An uncontrollable fire changed the life of today's saint. Born in 1290, Conrad was hunting one day in his native northern Italy when a fire he had lit got out of control. It spread to nearby fields and to a large forest as well. He fled the scene. Meanwhile, an innocent peasant was imprisoned, tortured into a confession, and condemned to death. Overcome by guilt, Conrad confessed and sold all his possessions to pay for the damaged property. A short time later, he and his wife agreed to separate. She entered a poor Clare monastery, and Conrad, then 25, joined a group of Franciscan hermits. Despite his quiet life, Conrad's reputation for holiness spread quickly. To better focus on his prayer life, he moved to a remote spot in Sicily. There he lived for 36 years as a hermit, praying for the world and for himself. People suffering from various complaints came to him there as well, seeking cures through his prayers. In 1350, Conrad died, kneeling before a crucifix and praying for the people of his town. His burial place soon became a popular shrine. There's more about the saints, along with inspiration and Catholic resources, at our website, franciscanradio.org. From the Franciscans and St. Anthony Messenger Press, this is Saint of the Day.
Our church teaches us to have hope. There's a line in the Catechism of the Catholic Church: we should not despair of the eternal salvations of persons who have taken their own lives. The church is compassionate. It's merciful. It's loving.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 4 minutes in front of the hour. I am talking with Wendy Weiss, host of On Call. So you guys going to a fish Friday night?
You know what? Our daughter is playing in a basketball game, and our other daughter is coming in from college. And so most of the fish fries in our neighborhood shut down before we will be able. We will do fish fries. Even no, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, no shortage.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Funny.
But no, we can't go tonight, which is just so sad because we look forward to that.
You are such a busy little family. It's amazing.
We are, and you are, and you will be. It's funny because you think, and you remember, I'm sure, when Chasen was this age, you know, you think that when the kids get older, it gets a little bit less, chaotic.
Right,
and,
right.
Oh, well, the joke's on me.
Yeah, it's
crazier now than ever.
There's always something going on. So what's on call for On Call today?
We will be talking to Lydia Lococo about natural family planning, and this is her second visit with us, and she is just a delightful guest. And we urge everyone who is curious about natural family planning, and perhaps they've started investigating NFP, to tune in today at 1 o'clock Central, because it's promising to be a fascinating show. She's terrific. Just
very
terrific.
Good. Very good. And great show. I know I've said it before, but I love what you've done with On Call. It's just fascinating. The interviews are great. The calls are great, and I just love listening to it.
I'm just going to have to start sending you a weekly check of some sort. Put you on retainer. Thank you so much. You're very, very, very kind.
I miss you here in the morning, but I love listening to your show.
Oh, I miss you too, but I love listening to you and Mr. Glenn.
Yeah.
Oh, you too.
Just can't say enough good things about the Glenster.
The Glenster.
All right. Thanks, Wendy.
Have a great weekend. Thank you, Sean.
Hey, Glenn is next with news from the Vatican and around the world. And then Father Shane Tharp, Stephen Graydonis on films, Glenn Story Corner, and more coming up next hour.
Thanks for listening to this hour of Morning Air on listener-supported Relevant Radio. For information on guests and topics, go to relevantradio.com and enter keyword Morning Air. That's relevantradio.com, keyword Morning Air.